Look, it's very possible that they will get to 5,000 a week by the end of this year, which is what Elon also said. Musk says they have enough money to not have to raise anything to get there. So whether or not they can get there in terms of production, they have the cash to do it, certainly. It's really more a matter of the manufacturing system and the engineering and you know, Tesla's car making works, getting up to speed on time. And it sounds like they can. It's not a really aggressive ramp up in terms of speed. The big issue will be quality. They've got to put out quality cars because this is their mass market vehicle.
I can tell you, I've spoken with a lot of Republicans, Vani, on Capitol Hill who are very uneasy at the statements coming out of the White House regarding Attorney General Jeff Sessions. And quite frankly, they are a bit more refreshed, so to speak, that General Kelly has eased their concerns and urging the White House to back off their criticisms of the Attorney General.
So for the FBI to conduct an inquiry, there are certain things they can do on their own. But in order to gather documents and collect information, they need a grand jury to issue subpoenas for a lot of it. And so that's what this is confirming to us, is that they're now trying to gather information, and they need to have at least impaneled a grand jury to issue the request for that information. All we know is that they've now said we were seeking information. We don't know if anyone's gone before the grand jury.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Friday. It's August 4th, 2017. Glad you're here with us for the last day, the last business day of the week, and another edition of The Opening Bell. Lots to cover this morning. A little bit later on in the program, Rick Cini will be here. We'll talk to a cheap airfare and some travel news, aviation news as well when Paul gets here. When Rick gets here, Paul is on my mind too. Paul Nolte of Kingsview Asset Management is here as well. And we will talk about our portfolios and the economy. But first, on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk this morning, Dow futures are pointing toward a positive open on Wall Street later this morning. Dow futures are up 30 points, NASDAQ and S&P futures up single digits this morning. Around the globe, in Asia, markets are generally mixed after news in this country, too, that there has been a grand jury impaneled in Washington, D.C. by the special counsel Robert Mueller to investigate all things Russia. It is a major new development in the case. The grand jury will give Robert Mueller the ability to subpoena documents and records and other things, and also call in witnesses that have to go in and talk to the special prosecutor and the grand jury. That's a big deal. Asian markets were generally mixed today as well. Investors wait the monthly U.S. jobs report in this country. U.S. probe into Donald Trump, as I mentioned, causing some consternation in some markets around the world. The government due to issue its July jobs report later today. We'll talk a little bit about that with Paul Nolte coming up in a moment. U.S. markets finished mostly lower yesterday. The Standard & Poor's 500 shed about 0.2%. The Dow Jones Industrials notched its eighth gain in a row, adding less than 0.1%, though. The NASDAQ Composite lost about 0.4%. The benchmark U.S. crude oil is below $49 a barrel. The dollar gained against the yen and weakened against the euro. Elsewhere in Europe this morning, the FTSE is up just a fraction. The DAX and CAC also up just a fraction this morning. Some news happening in this country. Get ready for another competition for a big auto plant. Japanese automakers Toyota and Mazda Corporation say they plan to spend $1.6 billion to set up a joint venture auto manufacturing plant here in the U.S. It's a move they say will create up to 4,000 jobs. Plant will have an annual production capacity of about 300,000 vehicles and will produce Toyota Corollas for the North American market. Mazda will make crossover models there that it plans to introduce to the market both sides, and the company will split the cost for the plant equally, the companies. Toyota says it changed its plan to make Corollas at a plant in Mexico now under construction and instead will produce Tacoma pickup trucks there. President Trump had criticized Toyota for taking auto production jobs to Mexico. Another story today involving Volkswagen. A German Volkswagen executive is scheduled to plead guilty in Detroit today in a scheme to cheat nearly 600,000 diesel vehicles out of emissions. And the casino industry's largest lobbying group in the U.S. is rolling out a new code of conduct with consumer protection measures that it says are meant to promote responsible gambling. The code of the American Gaming Association calls on casino operators to be more transparent with patrons and to provide employees with extra training on how to spot problem gamblers. It is Jobs Day, and Paul Nolte is with us this morning from Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago. The big jobs report a little bit later on this morning. Paul, good morning. Welcome back to the Opening Bell.
Good morning, Steve. Nice to be with you again.
Good to talk to you as well. What are we thinking later this morning for the jobs report?
You know, it's going to be interesting because we saw the ISM data that came out earlier this week on manufacturing and non-manufacturing data that were below expectations. But within the ISM report are employment figures, and those came in a little bit below expectations, as did the ADP report yesterday. The expectations are for 175,000, 180,000 in new jobs, but I would say the risks are on the downside with this report. And of course, as we always talk about, wages are going to be the key. And again, the wage metrics in a lot of those ISM reports were coming in below expectations. So we might see, again, wage growth pretty sluggish at the 2.25% range again this month. So again, below expectations for both employment as well as wages later today.
The wages part of that is one that everybody is scratching their heads on, and it has become one of those issues where people are trying to figure out what's going on. I saw one report this week that sort of pointed the blame at companies and boards of directors for pocketing all of the profits that they're making because companies are generally doing well. Is there one reason over another why this isn't going where it should?
You know, there's a multitude of reasons, and it goes to, you know, companies that are doing a little bit more in using technology. We're seeing at McDonald's, you can now go to McDonald's, and instead of putting your order in with a person at the counter, you can do it electronically. There's consolidation with a lot of industries as we're seeing merger activity pick up. And we're also seeing it's difficult for employees to change jobs or to move to a different place. We had a lot of job mobility before where you could pick up from Chicago and move to another town and take a job there. It's getting a little bit more difficult to do that with housing prices as high as they are, especially versus overall income levels. So there's a variety of reasons. It's hard to point to any one thing to say this is the issue at the core.
You mentioned the jobs being lost in some cases to automation. Allstate Corporation, in its report this week, its quarterly report, talked about that new app that they have where you can actually file your claim online using the app and never really talk to a person. In their conference call, they said about 500 jobs from that alone had been lost, and they expected more. I'm guessing that's sort of similar across different companies, isn't it?
It is. And, you know, what you're seeing is we haven't made it to the shift yet. And there was a report that was highlighted earlier about the advent of Lotus 1-2-3 and Excel spreadsheets and what that's done to the accounting industry. And what that's done is it's taken away a lot of the accounting part of it, that part of the job. But it's increased a lot of the analytics. So you have a lot more analysts that are analyzing the data than ever before. But to those that are compiling the data, those jobs are fewer and far between. So that shift has gone on over the last 30, 40 years as people start using a lot more spreadsheets than ever before. We haven't yet seen that with a lot of the, if you will, artificial intelligence or computer technology, where there's going to be a shift in that workforce. And we're probably in the very early stages of that right now.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now, investors pushed deeper into uncharted territory yesterday, sending the Dow Jones 10 points higher to 22,026. The NASDAQ, meanwhile, backed away from its record high, closing 22 points lower at 6,340. The S&P 500 was off 5.5. President Trump's verbal assault on foreign companies that build cars in the U.S. might have worked. Japanese automakers Toyota and Mazda confirm a collaboration to build a new $1.6 billion vehicle assembly plant in the U.S., creating 4,000 jobs. The shipping wars are heating up. FedEx will not add surcharges for most packages shipped during the holiday season this year. 2 months ago, rival UPS announced new surcharges that will affect shipments near Black Friday and Christmas. And Dunkin' Donuts might dump the donuts, at least from its name. A test location in California will simply be called Dunkin', as the parent company works to rebrand itself as a destination for coffee as much as for donuts. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. It's 522. We're on with Paul Nolte this morning of Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago. And Paul, from the ADP jobs report, I don't know if it's going to be a harbinger of things in this jobs report today, but manufacturing jobs are being created very weak.
It was. It was one of the first down months that we've seen in a long time, and it goes back to the point that we're making that the estimate for today is 175,000-180,000, and there's probably some risk on the downside that it comes in maybe at around 140,000-150,000, maybe even a little bit weaker than that. So again, the jobs report risks are weaker along with the wages. So it's going to be an interesting report. And we're seeing, in general, a slowing of new job creation, not dramatically so. We're still creating a fair amount of jobs. 150 is nothing to sneeze at, but it is slower than what we've seen over the last 12 months or so. And it has been true with a lot of the economic data coming in a little bit weaker than expected. And part of the reason why the markets have really kind of struggled to make serious headway over the last 3-4 weeks or so.
One of the things I saw one analyst yesterday, and maybe you could say if this is accurate or not, say as long as we're creating about 100,000 jobs a month, we're doing okay because that accommodates people, the number of people generally looking each month. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, I think the number might be a little bit low. Going back a little bit, I think we were looking at maybe 150,000 to 170,000 as being that number, that magical number, if you will, that accommodates entry into the job labor force, et cetera. But certainly the number that we're looking at is a good number there. So 100, maybe a little bit on the low side, but a fair number.
All right. Jobs report coming out later this morning. Paul, since I talked to you last, we've hit 22,000 on the Dow. I knew you back when it was 21,000. Is this just really some sort of milepost in our heads, or was it a big deal?
As we get bigger numbers, 22,000 on the Dow, 1,000 points is a smaller percentage, so it's less than a 5% move in the Dow Jones. One of the markets that we're looking at actually is the NASDAQ market, and that's kind of the representation, if you will, of a lot of technology stocks. Technology has kind of struggled here over the last month or so, and we're seeing a subtle shift in the markets more toward value stocks and away from growth stocks. And I think some of that might be an indication that, again, the economy is slowing and investors are looking more toward the safe and secure stocks as opposed to those that are going to generally benefit from a strong economy.
Would Apple qualify in that? Because please tell me we have Apple in our portfolio after this week.
Oh, absolutely. That is one of our largest holdings right now. And it is all over the S&P 500 and certainly representative in the Dow, and part of the reason why the Dow has done well here with their earnings number. Apple is, it is a technology stock, but I think when you take a look at the products and who they're selling to, et cetera, an argument can be made that it is a consumer staple. Certainly the valuations of it, of Apple specifically, are a little bit cheaper than Procter & Gamble or Kellogg's, and they have a pretty good dividend and one that they're pretty aggressive about increasing. So it fits a lot of the characteristics of a consumer staple stock more so than a technology stock at this point.
And what are you liking more, stocks or bonds as we end the week here?
It's interesting. We still like the international markets. If you're in the equity market, they have to be there. And as we said, we're shifting a little bit more toward the value side. But we've been very favorable toward bonds. And over the last 3-4 weeks or so, bonds have outperformed stocks. And it's one of the metrics that we take a look at from the long-term perspective. And bonds have held up really pretty well so far this year, even in the face of a Fed raising rates. And bonds will be a good spot to hide, if you will, if and when the markets finally do take something more than a 3% decline, which we really haven't seen in over a year, which is very unusual for this market. So we think there's some risks to the equity market going forward. We still do like bonds to provide some level of safety. And if you have to be in the markets, you want to be in the safer, more steady-eddy type of companies. Like the consumer staples and maybe some of the utilities.
All right. Paul, good advice as always. We'll see you again next week.
Absolutely. We'll talk to you then. Thank
you. Have a great weekend. Paul Nolte from Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago at kingsview.com is where you can find out more. Paul is a senior portfolio manager there and SVP, again, at Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the program. It's 5:37. The U.S. Court of Appeals has ordered the FAA to take a closer look at the amount of space passengers have on commercial aircraft, both the leg room and the width of seats, after an advocacy group has challenged the organization, saying cramped planes are now a safety hazard and that the government needs to do something about it. Rick Cini is with us this morning. He's the founder and CEO of FairCompare.com out of Dallas. Rick, is this going to amount to anything?
To be honest, when you have the judiciary telling a government agency who is basically all seeing and all knowing what to do, you very rarely do you see something happen out of that, especially when they don't put a time frame for something to occur to kick it back. So I don't expect a huge amount to occur. I think it's going to be an interesting news story for a week or so, and maybe they'll be able to keep it in the news, you know, if nothing actually happens. But essentially, they're asking the FAA to come up with at minimum some more studies on the safety concerns around the change over the last few decades in seat size and pitch, which is the distance between seats and width, and what's going on in cabins today. Because even today, legacy airlines have basically turned the coach cabin into more leg room, less leg room, and hardly any leg room. You know, where you essentially have Spirit Airlines in the back few rows and what they would call sort of poor man's first class in the first few rows.
And the other part of this, too, is this advocacy group that's challenging the FAA has, looking at the size of the seats, too, the width of them, that sort of thing. Concerned about safety, what would the safety concern be?
Yeah, I think, the safety concern is just exiting the aircraft in the case of an emergency and whether or not it slows things down. Safety is very complicated. I don't know what kind of studies they run for those things, but apparently the judge wasn't very happy with what they were provided to show that that actually they have studies and have actually looked into the particular issue. Ultimately it would take Congress to set something probably around minimum seat size with the Passenger Bill of Rights, because the FAA generally demurs to airlines in this case. And just remember, airlines, it's in their best interest to actually make people comfortable. They measure these things in decimal points, right? So if somebody takes 2.5 trips a year and now they're only taking 2.3 trips per year, and that's 2 million people each day, that's billions of dollars in lost revenue to airlines if people quit taking as many trips as normal. So it's in the airline's best interest to thread the needle on this.
And the other part of this is, if you fly regularly, you know these seats keep going lower and lower, and the legroom keeps going lower and lower depending on the aircraft. I mean, at some point you can't go any lower, right?
And I think that's where you have these minimum standards that some people are asking. Spirit Airlines would be sort of the least amount of legroom, but in some cases, the legacy airlines, United, Delta, and American, have very similar sort of legroom in the back of their aircraft when they try to match those Spirit Airlines prices.
The other part, too, is that, you know, we as Americans, most of us are not getting any smaller. Do you think these two aspects are going to collide with each other sooner than later?
Yeah, ultimately, you also have the fact that you have a sea change in how many people are traveling on an aircraft. 7 or 8 years ago, you would almost always have an empty middle seat because flights were only 2/3 full. Now they're completely full, so you have that exacerbated by the fact that you had some extra room before when you had an empty seat in between you. That doesn't happen today.
Rick, there's some news here in Chicago that I'm interested to get your insight on. United Airlines say they're getting ready to start bunching flights closer together to better serve passengers at O'Hare. When they say bunching flights together, what do they mean, and how is this going to impact passengers potentially?
Yeah, they have a technique called banking, which is trying to get everybody in the same spot at the same time, which optimizes connections. For some consumers, it's a good thing because they don't spend as much time connecting at the airport. The problem is that if you have some flights that you want to fly on that are cheap, that aren't part of that banking, you can have longer wait times and longer longer connection times, especially for leisure travelers. But essentially, they're optimizing their schedules and trying to actually turn and have shorter connections, especially at large hub airports. We've seen American do that, for example, at Miami. They're doing this, United doing it there as well. So it's an optimization technique to try to let people spend less time in a particular airport, which actually means that particular aircraft might be able to take another flight that day, which is more revenue for airlines.
Is this the same thing we used to hear about called a hub and spoke concept for airports?
This is more about, like, instead of having different times during the day when the connecting flights occur, trying to bunch all those flights coming in and coming out at the same time. The one thing that can cause an issue is traffic, just general traffic into the airport, in and out, and causing delays there. If there's weather or something, it actually exacerbates some of that. So it's sort of the good and the bad. As long as they can sort of manage that, it typically is better for consumers.
Is there a chance here that United is going to start sort of a gate war with other airlines? I mean, at United, they control pretty much the airport. Is this going to sort of impede on other airlines?
It doesn't necessarily impede on them unless those airlines are sort of being moved away in those slots and everybody's trying to grab those best times. There are times where people are willing to pay more money during the day. People don't pay as much money if they have to take a 6 a.m. flight. They pay much more money if they take an 8 a.m. or 9 a.m. flight, so they don't have to get up at 4 a.m. in the morning. So the fact that they're going to be putting these together in certain times of the day could change that dynamic slightly, but I doubt it.
People looking for summer fares need to know that it's August. We all have on our calendars the two dates you gave us. August, what, 21st and 22nd?
Yeah, that's for both international and domestic for departure days. So you definitely should be still shopping for those. As kids go back to school, the prices have dropped pretty dramatically, essentially for fall travel. And, the scary thing too, Steve, is that if you're looking to leave the Wednesday before and the Sunday after Thanksgiving, you need to start shopping now because those prices are starting to go up.
Any deals right now for travel out of O'Hare?
It is probably one of the best times of the year to actually fly. I mean, going out to the West Coast, if you're paying more than $200 round trip to San Francisco and Los Angeles, especially on Tuesday, Wednesday, Saturday departures, you're paying too much. If you're going out to the East Coast, again, $160 round trip, if you're paying more than that, you're paying too much. And then Miami and Orlando on many flights are under $110 round trip. So you can pretty much get to any coast, any location, northeast, all the way down to the Southwest for under $200. If you're paying more than $200, you're paying too much.
All right, Rick, happy travels.
Hey, thanks, Steve.
Rick Cini is the founder and CEO of FareCompare.com out of Dallas. You can follow Rick on Twitter at Rick Cini, Seaney, and also at FareCompare, FareCompare.com.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. It's 5:49 on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk this morning. Futures are pointing toward a positive open on Wall Street. Dow futures had been as high as 40 points. It's pulling back a little bit now, up just about 4. NASDAQ and S&P futures are mixed now, and crude oil is at $48.95 a barrel. Gold and silver are trading generally flat this morning. It was sort of a mixed day around the globe this morning. Asian markets generally mixed. In Europe, markets are generally higher, with the exception of one of the exchanges there. Again, futures pointing toward opening gains on Wall Street later this morning, up about 41 points now on the Dow. It's time to check in, as we do every Friday, with Orion Samuelson with Commodities and Agriculture. Good morning, Orion. Happy Friday to you.
Well, a happy Friday to you too, Steve. And we're underway with state fairs now. The Wisconsin State Fair opened yesterday at West Allis. That's just west of downtown Milwaukee, and it'll do a 10-day run. So we're into the state fair season, and of course, again, this weekend, the full slate of county fairs around the country. A lot going on.
A couple of tidbits from the news this week. There was that immigration story. The administration wanting to crack down on legal immigration. I've heard quite a few different corners of the ag community concerned about this.
Well, the ag community depends so much on the labor from Mexico, for example, and from Central America, because the statement that immigrant that immigrants take American jobs really just isn't true that much, because the labor in the lettuce fields of Southern California and in Arizona, and the labor in meatpacking plants around the country, basically done by a lot of foreign workers that come across. Matter of fact, at Yuma, Arizona, every day during the harvest season for lettuce, 30,000 immigrant laborers come across the border in the morning and do the work in the fields, and then go back at night to their homes in Mexico, and 30,000 every morning and every night. So we need the foreign labor to do these jobs that Americans just won't do. And we have a lot of cow milkers who are Hispanic. I think the last count I saw in Wisconsin, for example, where I grew up, and we as kids got up at 5 o'clock in the morning to do the milking. Kids will go to work at McDonald's before they'll get up that early to milk cows. And so I think we have about 6,000 Hispanic cow milkers in Wisconsin. So, yes, they would like to have a more sound labor availability. And frankly, there are some areas where there are concerns over crops rotting in the field because they can't harvest them.
Yeah, it seems like this would be a seems like it is a major threat to not only the agriculture economy but the economy overall of the country.
Well, true, because somebody has to do this work, and as I said, they're landscaping, meat processing houses, and then the work in harvesting the crops in the field, and yeah. We need that foreign labor to come across the border, and I don't think they're taking American jobs because Americans don't want to do that.
Yeah. The Ag Secretary, Sonny Perdue, is going to do an old-fashioned, I guess, bus tour, and he's going to stop in Illinois, I believe. Listening tour is what it's called.
Yes. As a matter of fact, we have several listening tours because we have to write a farm bill this year, and so we have the chairman and the ranking member of the House Agriculture Committee traveling around the country. We have Secretary of Agriculture Sonny Perdue traveling around the country. We have some senators who are doing that this week, for example, at Farm Fest in Redwood Falls, Minnesota, that Max Armstrong attended the day before yesterday. Yesterday, which was the final day of that three-day show, they had Colin Peterson, who is the Democratic vice chairman of the House Agriculture Committee from Minnesota, and then Mike Conaway from Texas, who is the chairman of the House Agriculture Committee. They conducted a hearing session. And at the Farm Progress Show in Decatur at the end of the month, I think August 30th is the date, because that show is Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, August 29, 30, and 31. They're going to have a listening session there at 9 o'clock in the morning on the 30th. So farmers from around Illinois will have an opportunity to visit with the chairman, and then, as you say, with the Secretary of Agriculture, who will be doing the same thing.
Well, Orion, it is Sweet Corn Day here at WGN today. It's Sweet Corn Day, and I heard one of the guys from Twin Garden Farms talking about the fact that it's in the 50s this morning, and that's really not good weather for picking the corn on his farm and making it make sure it's good to pick.
Well, that sounds like Gary Pack of Twin Garden Farms, who I had on the Saturday morning show a couple of weeks ago. And he said that a week ago would be the first time that they'd be bringing in the Mirai sweet corn. So if you see Gary running around the halls at WGN, say good morning to him, because he's been a longtime friend, and they turn out some great sweet corn. But, yeah, it's unusual to see this kind of a temperature in the month of August, and it is raising questions about the yield of the corn crop here in the U.S. May not be quite what we expect, but on Thursday of next week, we get our first real crop report based on facts rather than supposition, because the August crop report We now know how many acres we have planted, or at least have a pretty good idea, and we now know what the weather conditions have been since we planted the crop back in April and May. And so we'll get an estimate on the total corn production and the soybean production here in the Midwest. And that one will be watched carefully, particularly for the corn number, because that's the question mark. Basically, July is the month that we make the corn crop. August is the month that we make the soybean crop. So rainfall this month will be noted a good deal by soybean growers, because that fills out the pods and gives us the yield.
All right, Orin, have a great weekend. We'll be listening to you and Max tomorrow morning bright and early at 5 o'clock.
Oh, and we've got Jim Fazell on tomorrow. A lot of complaints about trees dying this year, and so Jim is going to join us, and we're going to talk about that tomorrow on the Saturday Morning Show.
All right, Orion Samuelson, thank you very much.
You bet.
5:57 now here in the opening bell, the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for this Friday, August 4th now. There is a big major report. The jobs report is due out today. Labor Department releases employment data for July this morning. Also, the Commerce Department has its international trade data for June. Berkshire Hathaway among the companies reporting quarterly financial results today. The jobs report, do you expect that to show anywhere from 170 to 185,000 jobs? The unemployment rate likely to drop to about 4.3%. 180,000 jobs will be the target number we'll be looking for. We'll be also watching for the wage data from that. If it falls to 4.3, that'll match May's 16-year low for the unemployment. That's the Market Desk Outlook for this Friday. It's August 4th, 2017. Some of the things that could move the markets.